Hey, all you evil rogues, stop looting the graves and listen up. It's time for another episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a show dedicated to the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, tips, interviews, and reviews for the community, by the community. And now, here's your host.
Hello, this is Jay, a.k.a. Navinka Naroda, and I'm the only host we've got this week. Michelle is nursing a sick child, and herself is also caught a cold. Trey, his wife and daughter are involved with a play. A local art troupe here putting on a play called Annie. Some of you might be familiar with it. His daughter's actually got a part in the play, and his wife is conducting the orchestra. So he's also out with them. Of course, I think he's also running the lights and production for them. So good for them. They're having a good time with that, I'm sure. So I'm hanging solo with you guys today. So we got a few things going on. Let's see. My daughter and I finished playing the module that was designed for five-year-olds, where we got to complete the quest of finding the baby dragon. She loved it. It took about 2.5 hours to finish that up. We're going to go back on the vault and post our votes for that guy because it was great. She had a great time and was asking me all weekend if I could go play Neverwinter Nights. When are we going to play Neverwinter Nights, Daddy? When are we going to play Neverwinter Nights? So I think that was a major success on that part there. Toward the end of last week, Trey had an awesome panel discussion about storytelling across Neverwinter Nights mediums. That panel consisted of Bruce Nielsen, author of the Light Reborn series, Tony Donadio, a.k.a. Andarian, author of Sanctum of the Archmage module series, and Kevin Sheehan, creator of the Glowering Game World for Neverwinter Nights. Each person brought a different perspective to the discussion about DM-led modules, story-driven modules, or, you know, full game or persistent world. This is an awesome discussion. It was incredible to sit there and listen to these guys talk. Trey and I sat back and just listened because it was just a fantastic time. Once these guys got started, we thought they were never going to stop. We recorded 3 hours of audio, and you will be hearing part one of that later on tonight. Or it's tonight to me, but later on the show. So don't want to miss that out. But don't fast forward just yet, because we got some listener feedback and some news items coming up. So right now we got a listener letter from Robert Crowford. I'm going to say it's C-R-O-F-F-O-R-D. I'm going to assume that's Crowford. He sent us an email saying, "Hey, great podcast as always. Nice mix of the personalities. Halloween Foxy as her convincing self looking for whatever angle. The good-natured fighter, and you, the moderator, trying to keep things from getting out of hand," which they can get out of hand sometimes. He also said that world that we were talking about, which was Gallows Bird, sounded a lot like what he was trying to do in his automatic, or in his world, but more automatic. He said, "Anyway, if you take a gander at my entry into the BioWare World Design Module Competition, he'd appreciate it. It's a single-player mod, but it had a couple of leader crystals in there in the chest for people wanted to play as a party. The module had to be short, so but you think there's a good enough content in there for a gaming session. You can check that module out at shrinkster.com/R3G if you'd like to check that out." If you remember in the last show, we posted a question about running Neverwinter Nights 1 on Microsoft Windows Vista, and we got a reply from TDR on that, so thanks for giving some reply on that. His response goes, "Don't get it. Vista is not worth it anyway, even though it's the only one that supports the new DX10. He says it's a big resource drainer, and it has way too much security," which I would agree with that. DX10 and more security and a couple of graphical updates are the only things different from XP to Vista. XP works a whole lot better. Thanks for the feedback. I'll definitely keep that in mind when looking at it. Unfortunately, I don't think I've been able to find anybody that sells a laptop or even a PC pre-made that doesn't come with Vista. So, or maybe stuck in it anyway. Anybody else has any input on how to get Neverwinter Nights 1 to run on Microsoft Windows Vista, please chime in on the conversation. You can do that by emailing us at show@neverwinternightspodcast, or via Skype, you can leave a voicemail by calling NWN Podcast. That's all one word. So some big things going on in the news. saw a big post on GameTrailers.com. It has a 6.5-minute video that the developers walked through that was presented at the E3 this year of the Mask of the Betrayer expansion. It had a lot of really good information in it and showed you a lot of new things and new critters that they'll be putting in there. So to find out more about that, check it out at shrinkster.com/R3H, Romeo 3 Hotel. Also, if you're a big fan of the Pool of the Radiance Remastered series, Chapter 2 is now seeking beta testers. Marcus Wayne Schlegel, Hall of Fame author of Pool of Radiance Remastered module, has announced that Chapter 2 of this three-part series is now ready for public beta testing. If you are interested in becoming a beta tester, you can contact Marcus at Marcus, that's M-A-R-K-U-S, at Schlegels, S-C-H-L-E-G-E-L-S dot D-E. Also, for those of you in the international community, you can also enjoy the first in the series as it's been translated into Spanish. To find out more about that, this news item came from the Vault, so you can check it out with the URL there. We also shrinksterized that URL, so it's shrinkster.com/R3I. If you've been keeping up with the game industry and a parent company for Atari, Infogrames, you might have come across this one, but they have retained the Dungeons & Dragons property rights until 2017, so that's for another 10 years. Yeah, Atari's parent company, Infogrames, I always have a hard time pronouncing that, and Hasbro signed a new agreement extending the rights for that for another 10 years. The $19.5 million agreement also saw Hasbro take back the rights from their popular board games, including Scrabble, Risk, Battleship, Boggle, and Simon. To find out more about that, you can check out the news item at shrinkster.com/R3J. Hey, all you graphic artists, if you haven't got your art in for the Neverwhere Nights 2 fan arts contest, you need to hurry. It's July 31st is the deadline for that, so if you haven't got your entry in, get a move on. A selection of the art submitted to be in the competition has recently been posted on the Neverwhere Nights 2 community update site. For full details on the contest, you can check out shrinkster.com/R3K. And to see all of the current entries, check out shrinkster.com/R3L. Give you a few quick updates about the podcast and what's going on here. If you have enjoyed the show and would like to help out, we recommend clicking on the PayPal donate link on our website. Placing a few gold pieces into the coffers will go a long way in supporting our efforts, and we really appreciate those that have already done so. I'm going to give you an update on voicemail. We've kicked Odeo off to the side. That hasn't been working out for us very well. You can contact us directly via Skype by just placing a call to NWN Podcast. Your comments or questions will be recorded and used in the future show. I want to give a big thank you to everyone that responded to our producer's wanted plea there. We've got someone filled a position. Trey has decided to step up and take that on. And so he will be producing the shows for a while. And I want to say a big thank you to anyone, those few people who did respond to that. And don't think you're all going to get out of it too easily, because we still may be contacting you to help us expand the team in other ways there. So let's check in with part one of this incredible interview this discussion that Trey put together for Neverwhere Nights as a storytelling medium. Just sit back and listen to these guys. It's awesome.
All right, tonight we have with us three renowned NWN community members and builders. They're also storytellers. And what we will focus on in this roundtable discussion is storytelling across all Neverwinter Nights mediums. As everyone knows, you know, books and movies are both very different ways to tell a story. When Neverwinter Nights was created, BioWare and Obsidian handed our community entirely new ways to tell a story not possible before. At least three of these is through single-player mods, through Dungeon Master Play or DM Play, and through Persistent Worlds. And then there's probably others that haven't been invented yet. So tonight we have Bruce Nelson with us, author of the Light Reborn series for Neverwinter Nights with us.
Hello.
He's been on the show several times in the past. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce will provide a perspective knowledge of multiplier modules. His modules are both single player and available via DM play, but he'll be representing Dungeon Master Play tonight. We also have with us Tony Donadio, a.k.a. Andarian. We interviewed Tony several episodes ago about his Sanctum of the Archmage series. Tony will provide a perspective from the single-player side of things. He also has experience with DM play as well. So welcome back, Tony.
Thanks, Trey. Glad to be here.
And with us for the first time on the show is Kevin Sheehan, a.k.a. Eric O. Kevin did join us for the first Galesburg podcast event that we played over on the Shadow Thieves servers. He played an excellent dwarf, by the way. Kevin is also the author of the Glowing Game World for Neverwinter Nights 1, and you have a version 2 in the works also, don't you?
Yes, that's correct, and thanks for the introduction. Glowing has been a persistent world in Neverwinter Nights 1 for 3 or 4 years, and we do plan a Neverwinter Nights 2 build. It's going a little slow, but a lot of persistent worlds have kind of found that as the toolkit's been a bit of a challenge to come to grips with as other interviews you've had have talked about.
Cool. And we hope to have Kevin on in the future for a future interview, a future episode. So
I'll try not to wear out my welcome today.
Kevin will provide us the online persistent world storytelling view. We're kind of going to do a round table. I'll probably ask a few questions. Each of the guys will have their own questions, and hopefully it'll flow pretty good, and this will be an interesting discussion to listen to. So let's start out with Tony. Tony, why don't you, as we said, one of the mediums for storytelling in Neverwinter Nights is single-player arena. Well, what makes that so fun in a single-player?
In terms of storytelling in the single-player environment, before talking really about the what's distinctive about single-player, I think that it's important to sort of talk about what's distinctive about storytelling in a CRPG type of environment in general, in something like Neverwinter Nights. I think that what Neverwinter Nights in particular makes possible is a form of what I'd call interactive storytelling as opposed to traditional storytelling. And interactive storytelling basically is storytelling in which the audience member, or in this case we'll call him the player, is an active participant in the story rather than a passive spectator in the events of the story, as is the case generally with traditional forms of fiction. If you're reading a book, you're reading the book passively rather than being actively involved in it, and so on. And the distinctive feature, I think, of interactive storytelling is the involvement of the player's faculty of choice in the course of events, and in particular, the sense that he is an actor, that he is taking action in the story, and not just perceiving it or not just being a spectator in it. And the ability to make choices, and sometimes the ability to make choices that can affect the course of events, but the important thing being the fact that he feels that he can do something that makes a difference, and that he is active as opposed to passive. And this can often involve having a story with multiple possible outcomes, certainly elements of the story that can change at least to some extent based on what he does. But all of those different options and different things that can happen have to all work and make sense. And it can be very challenging to craft a story or a plot that can encompass different options while having them all make sense at the same time. So with that sort of context, I think that the particular strengths of single-player storytelling are that it's sort of closest to the traditional art forms, like a form of interactive fiction or cinema, in which in a single-player module you basically have prescribed all of the options ahead of time. The builder has spent a lot of time agonizing over exactly how to craft the conversations, the interactions, and so on. All of the options are set ahead of time, and as a result, because all that works done ahead of time, a lot of detail work can be done to make the experience very compelling. You know, one of the most important things about compelling storytelling is that you really make it compelling through the inclusion of a lot of details that all work together to create a compelling experience. And that's really what the pros of single player play are. The cons are that it's only practical to support a limited set of paths or options through the course of events. And in a single player module, there are only certain things that you can allow in terms of options for the player. And that's it. As opposed to forms of play where there are other players involved or there are DMs involved that can expand those options at sort of spontaneously at the time of play. So I think that's really the distinction between single player versus
Bruce, other why don't you go ahead and introduce kind of how storytelling is structured in a multiplayer game where there's DMs involved.
Okay. Before I do that, let me just comment quickly on single player. There are really kind of three models. Well, there's probably more than three, but three general models with single player that tend to be followed at this point. You kind of have the Final Fantasy model, which is almost entirely linear. It's really about telling a story in a fairly traditional way. However, Final Fantasy does understand their medium. Square Enix understands their medium. And they do allow a certain degree of interactivity that seems to mostly affect how you feel about how main character interacts with the other characters. So it actually modifies the way you perceive the story, even though it's the exact same story for everybody. Then you have on the other side of that, like the Oblivion model, which is really story is not king. It's about a series of subquests. It's very open-ended. It's really about developing a character, not character development, like in the story sense, but statistically developing that character the way you want to develop them. They can be a ninja, they can be a fighter, they can be a mage, they can be a mage ninja, however you want to do it. And then you have kind of the BioWare model, which is it's kind of a little bit like the Final Fantasy model where it has a fairly linear story, but they put more open-endedness in it, a lot more freedom of where you want to go, kind of borrowing somewhat from the Oblivion model. And they also really make a point of having multiple endings. Even though at this point in time, the medium being so new, typically that multiple endings is a good ending and an evil ending. And the good ending usually is pretty well written, but the evil ending tends to be a caricature of what evil really is. It's kind of like, I'm a mean guy, I go around hurting kids for fun. But just the very fact they have those two choices, I think, enhances the decision to be a good guy, or, you know, because there was a real choice that was presented. Now, by comparison, if you look at those three models, and there's probably others that could be brought up, and compare it to DM play, DM play could follow any of those models, but you have a great deal more flexibility in spontaneous action. Anything the players can think up they can do, in theory, the Dungeon Master can modify things to be able to adapt to those decisions. In practice, they still have to rein in players and not do things too wild. But there's just a great deal more spontaneity, more interaction when you have a live DM that's able to adapt to whatever circumstances. If you think about like the classic pen and paper Dungeons and Dragons, you know, it's not unheard of to have some DM just make up something on the spot. And they decide, oh, I'm going to go over to this kingdom, and he starts making up a story for what happens when you go over to that kingdom, and it gives the player a great deal more flexibility than in a single-player mod.
So, and finally, Kevin, why don't you give us a perspective on how the story works for online persistent worlds that are running 24/7?
I would agree, you know, that we are all trying to tell a story in these different mediums and support that type of player interaction. The goal, I guess, of what BioWare attempted to do with Neverwinter Nights was to, as faithfully as they could, recreate the Dungeons & Dragons rule set, and in so doing, that game, being a pen and paper game, has been, over time, devoted to a game master with players. The online persistent world, in addition to the Dungeon Master DM-led modules, attempts to kind of recreate that environment. The single-player campaigns are a lot of fun. I've had a lot of enjoyment myself with those. But where I saw the attraction in this game was the ability to get together with several friends online and adventure. And of course, we talked about, as was mentioned, the three different models: the EverQuest model, which is a fairly linear quest or linear plot line, or the kind of Oblivion model, where it's about building your character. What Persistent Worlds tend to do is a lot more along that Oblivion line: build your character. The earliest Persistent Worlds were really all about that. They were really kind of very shallow, I guess I would say, quest-wise. There were several repeatable quests you could do. You would do these repeatedly, level your characters to a certain point, move on. Eventually, those kind of, became passé, as it were. And the long-running Persistent Worlds that have been out there have been able to combine that kind of linear plot style with these leveling type quests, with DM interaction, and in addition, builder interaction that takes input back from the players and makes modifications to the game world itself, just as was being discussed, how a dungeon master in a pen and paper game may come off the cuff and build or start a new side adventure as the characters move into that area. So the Persistent World is just trying to provide that place to keep everybody's attention and allow them to become a part of that story writing this entire novel. And it's different for the builder. The builder really has to be willing to let things flow. The storyteller in this case has to be really willing to let things flow and not be too prescriptive in everything. You tend to run into a lot of kind of player, builder conflict in that model. And from the community that surrounds these Persistent Worlds, that tends to polarize the community and can be quite interesting to manage. But that's really, I think, you know, in that storytelling perspective, we're all trying to get to that state of we have a vision. We do this to depict that and to enjoy it.
Well, Tony, you had mentioned difficulty with answering question 9 about what types of stories are going to be play to the strengths of the medium. So even though you said you might punt, try to answer the question, because I'm really curious what you think.
Well, I'll do my best to ad-lib on it. Let me just get back to question 9 was the...
It's what types of stories can be told in Neverwinter Nights in your given medium, so single-player mods, that can't be done via traditional medium? How do you play to the strengths of this storytelling medium?
Yeah, I did a little thinking about that today, and I wasn't able to come up with very much other than to, you know, go back to what I thought was the distinguishing characteristic of modules in a computer-based interactive environment, which is that the kinds of stories that you can tell are the kinds of stories that involve really immersing the player into a role, involving him in the story, taking action in the story, and being able to make choices, being active rather than a passive participant. But
yeah,
it's one of those questions that going beyond that sort of abstract answer really involves making a lot of modules and seeing what works, and then just sort of inductively arriving at conclusions about, well, what does this really give us the ability to do yet? I'm not sure I have an answer to that question yet.
Yeah, you know, I think it's something that needs a lot more thought. I read a book called Hamlet on the Holodeck. I forget who wrote it, but it's a professor at Harvard or Berkeley or something, a lady who does not come from a computer background, who recognized interactive fiction, storytelling, as a new medium.
Oh, okay.
So she wrote a book on the subject, trying to suggest where it came from, what its history is, and maybe like where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure she's wrong on a lot of points because she's making predictions that won't prove out to be true. But it really got me thinking about that, the fact that there should be certain types of stories that are more appropriate, that, that couldn't have been told in other mediums that could be here or could be told more powerfully.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually made a really, not necessarily that good of an attempt, but an attempt in my last mod to tell a story about faith and trying to have faith in your decisions and such, where I pose a really difficult question and you have to basically on faith decide which way to go because there's no way to figure it out.
Okay.
And so you could tell that story in a different medium, but it seems like I was hoping that would create, you know, stronger player angst. Am I going to make the right decision? Things like that. Of course,
I see.
Of course, I cheat, and both are right decisions.
Uh huh.
So there's a bit of an illusion there in the decision, although it does make some difference in the story.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, again, that's a story in which the player's active involvement is brought in more of a focus. He has to do something, and the sense of anxiety over making the right decision that you don't experience, or that you only experience vicariously in traditional media, like reading a novel.
That's what I was thinking, anyhow.
Yeah,
it's the whole question of illusion versus the reality of a decision, mm-hmm. which I'm sure we'll talk about more as later on in the show.
Okay.
There was a bit of illusion in the decision, but nobody knows that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've actually played it online with real players, it's a heart-wrenching decision. They have to decide whether they're going to give this artifact to their religious leader who someone else is suggesting is actually corrupt.
Mm.
And they're not sure if it's the right thing to do or not. And so there was just no way I could realistically, within the amount of effort I was going to put into this mod, that I was going to come up with two entirely branching storylines from that point forward.
Right.
So I figured out a pretty effective way to have the storyline re-merge mm-hmm. with only a small difference in what happens.
Okay.
And so that was what I was getting at. And in my mind, that didn't reduce the role-playing opportunity. It did not reduce the fun of trying to make that decision and conveying that sense of what do I do. And yet, I had at least one player complain after they went back and played the mod and found out that it doesn't turn out to be two completely different endings that mm-hmm. they really would have preferred if it had been, because they like having their decisions branch things and really make a huge difference in the game.
I see what you're getting at. I think that's something that a lot of us experience as builders. I've had criticism from players over what they perceive to be lack of options or lack of options having impact. And I think that you've got to sort of balance the fact that there is only so much time that you've got to develop a work, and that, as you said, developing two entirely branching storylines exponentially. If you keep making that decision, it exponentially increases the amount of effort needed to build a mod. So what most mod makers do, and I think this is a very legitimate thing to do, is find a way to branch the story and then remerge it, exactly as you said. Remerge it with a slight difference, but not a difference that profoundly changes everything. And I don't think it's necessary to profoundly change everything, and in fact it's dangerous to profoundly change everything, because you have to structure, in a storytelling experience, you have to structure the plot within limits. That if you go beyond those limits, you're no longer telling a story, or you're no longer telling the same story. And the technique of remerging F or branch is something that is a way to both present a legitimate option, but at the same time do it in a way that doesn't exponentially increase the amount of effort that's involved in building the story.
I agree.
That is very true, and it's exacerbated. When you take a look, well, and possibly even, I mean, I know there's some been advances in Neverwinter 2 with some things that allow for a little more flexibility in some of those as the scripting's matured, and a lot of that you do have a little bit more flexibility to put things in, but it does make a lot more effort, especially if you're going to do a serial setting where you're going to do several modules. You need to come to some conclusion and then move mm-hmm. forward into the next level or the next chapter.
Yeah.
Excellent. Bruce, didn't you have a question about Persistent Worlds?
Yeah, Persistent Worlds, I haven't done a whole lot with them. I've tried a couple, once or twice. But, you know, most of my experience with persistent worlds would actually be something like World of Warcraft, which really isn't the same thing as what is done with Neverwinter Nights Persistent Worlds, where you build up a community.
Right, that's generally correct.
Right.
It seems to me that, if I could use an analogy here, when we talk about the three different mediums, single player, DM play in sessions, and then persistent worlds, in my mind I sort of map single player to be like a movie. It's a focused experience that is primarily based on telling a story. Mm-hmm. Whereas I see DM play as being more like a book, where the emphasis is really on opportunities to role play with the other characters. That story is still very important in a book, obviously. Likewise, it's very important in DM play. But it's more focused on characterization. And then if I were to follow that analogy, I think of Persistent Worlds as being maybe more like television shows, a television series that has an arc story. So like Lost or Babylon 5, where you're trying to tell a story over a very long period of time. And things develop over a long period of time. First of all, I'd like to know if that's maybe an accurate, somewhat accurate analogy. And secondly, if it is, how in the world do you keep so many people synchronized on a story like that over a long period of time? What are the devices? Do you have to use forms? You know, what do you do to keep people synchronized doing that?
Yeah, exactly. I think that has been the evolution of the Persistent Worlds, has been to that kind of TV series, serial type of product or to end result. Initially, obviously, it was finding the tool set, figuring out all of the persistency necessary in order to even establish a persistent world, how to handle repeatable quests, and quite often they were early on World of Warcraft-like. You really had some prescripted quests, but you only had those to do. A DM could come on and perhaps spawn some more encounters for you, or various things in the environment, but there wasn't an awful lot of change in the world to that extent. And I think that the long-running Persistent Worlds have gone to that kind of episodic content, as it were. Forums are a large part of the community. There's also an element, and you'll find on these Persistent Worlds, you'll find players that are on, in my opinion, far too long, or longer than they should be. In other words, there's plenty of other real-world activities that we all should be doing. But there's other players that come in once a week, and what has to happen, and it does become difficult, is these players kind of have to agree that while time has passed in reality, time has passed in the game as the clock has continued to tick, they have to just accept that it's now time for this next chapter. They have to kind of, I mean, you're using this as an escape from reality to enjoy something that you want to participate
sometimes
in.
I enjoy it a little too much.
Use that as well. Exactly. So yes, it's hooks like that. We use a lot of community forums, and the fact that if we have guilds in game, they'll have forums for those guilds where they can privately discuss plans and things that are going to happen, events they're going to do in game. We would set up our forums such that the Dungeon Master's staff would have access to those forums as well to be able to read them, develop plot hooks within those. Within our modules, we generally build in several areas that are not reachable via normal portals and such, so that the Dungeon Masters can go in, pre-plan, lay out encounters, and do things within those areas, port the players in, and run them through areas in the module that way. So there's several tricks and hooks and things that we've done in order to do that. And as cities or towns evolve, or as new areas are discovered, the builders put those in game, including things like player housing, where they can rent rooms, store items in their chests, in their homes, and so on. And it kind of gives them a sense of ownership.
Okay, related question then. How much story gets told in in-character posts offline from the world?
That can depend both on the dungeon master running a plot and the particular world. For us in Glorwing, we didn't do as much on the forums other than the kind of in-between major epic events. We tried to maintain the epic event stories within the game itself. We would schedule those. We would get players and dungeon and DMs online to set those up and run through the plot sequences and so on that we had planned and try to do those as much in-game as possible.
Now, Bruce, didn't you ask the, kind of like, so do you publish it in a newspaper? I thought that was funny.
Exactly. We obviously
actually, I said that partly tongue-in-cheek, because I've actually heard of Persistent Worlds, like, on their website, publishing a newspaper from the world so that it recounts events and things like that.
Yes, and actually we had an in-game newspaper that for a short time several players were actually running that they could actually add news articles in-game that would be stored persistently in the database. You could buy the paper in-game and read these things. These are the types of little tricks and hooks that really make players have something to do other than just go out and hack and slash. They'll find these neat little things to do in game and come up with little, I guess, crafting skills or businesses that they run and such. But yes, we do have to do that, and we do have to accept that Dungeon Master may have a different group from week to week and has to kind of summarize things and get things kicked off. It's not as linear, you know, as a story where you're expecting one player to go from point or from the start to the end of the story, you know, or vice versa.
I know a lot of the Persistent Worlds that I've played in, there's usually been like bulletin boards that people can post to kind of keep each other kind of up to date as
yes.
well.
Yes. Yeah. Selling all their gear and messages to others and lots of interesting content has been developed for multiplayer Persistent World.
So this idea of, you know, keeping everybody kind of up to date on the story, you know, in a Persistent World, that's, you know, that sounds like, you know, one of the challenges faced with Persistent World. What are some of the other challenges faced in the other mediums? Anyone?
Can I
I'll answer that.
As Jay would say, go!
I'll answer that for DM call.
And we're off.
You know, I mentioned this in a post that we were doing before the show, the idea of a shared imagination. There really is sort of a limit to what players can do. No matter how open-ended you try to make it, there's always some limits. In single player, those limits are prepared in advance, and the player may or may not like those limits. They may bump up against them and hate that, or they may be okay with it, but it doesn't matter because the limits are there.
Exactly.
In DM play, whether you're talking about a DM in Persistent World or just DM sessions like I do, sometimes players do have this belief that they should be able to do anything they can think of. And that just isn't true, because that could ruin it for other people that are playing.
That is very true in a Persistent World. That happens quite often and becomes a large issue at times.
Actually, I have an example that comes from a Persistent World. There was a guy who made a post that said, why do bad guys always get the shaft? And he posed the question. He said, I don't get it. I've got this perfect plan for how I'm going to take over this Persistent World on behalf of my evil god and rule it, you know, with an iron fist. And it's a plan. It should work. It's intelligent. And the DMs won't let me, the builders won't let me do it. And why is it that bad guys get the shaft? You know, and that was how he posed the question. And I wrote back and I posted back and I said, okay, so let's say I'm a good guy who comes in there, and I decide I'm going to remove all bad guys. I've got this perfect plan for defeating all evil in the world so that it's a nice place with no conflict. Okay? And so I've got this plan, and it should work, but the builders won't let me do it. Why do good guys always get the shaft? The truth is that what he's doing is he's violating everyone else's shared imagination. He wants to do it to his exclusion. He wants to accomplish something that no one would be fun for him, but for no one else.
Exactly.
Okay, and that's why he can't do it.
That was always our rule number one, right? That was for our persistent world, and most was this is not fun for just you. And evil is one of the most absolute difficult alignments to play in a persistent world. Unless the builders are extremely talented and sit down and lay out prescripted quests and other things that these evil aligned characters can do, playing a smart evil character in a what turns out to be a basically good society, and, you know, I'm going to form an evil city. This evil city is going to be made up of evil people. Well, even cities that we deem as evil, the people in those cities are not evil. They sell things to each other. They help each other. It's a concept that, you know, some players do get stuck on.
I think that
it's what I said. Go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say that I think you've hit on a very important point. You're talking about it primarily in terms of the requirements for shared imagination in a gaming experience in general, and I think that that's true. In particular, with regard to a storytelling experience, there's an even more stringent requirement, and that's that the player who wants to do whatever he wants to do, that perspective is incompatible with the idea of a storytelling experience, because a storytelling experience by definition has to be limited. It has to be delimited by the plot. It has to be delimited by the story that's being told. If the story is being told by a single-player module developer, he's got a specific story in mind, and the player who wants to do whatever he wants has to either decide, I'm going to buy into this story, I'm going to accept this story, and I'm going to play it, or he's got to decide, this isn't right for me, I should be playing something else. It's the same sort of thing when you get into either a persistent world or a DM'd environment. You have to, at some point, say, I can't do whatever I want, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to participate in a story, because the story has to place limits. The story has to be a certain kind of progression of events and not others. That's what makes it a story, as opposed to just some sort of a collection of events that don't add up to a story.
Let me make two comments on that. First of all, I think that's why the Oblivion model exists. Granted, Oblivion has a story in it, but you don't have to follow the story. In fact, you can ignore the story entirely.
Right, and
if you want, you can go around and you can just do all the evil ones, all the evil side quests, and you can really kind of play your character any way you want. I think most people don't do that precisely because, as fun as that is on the surface, I don't think it gets you very far, being able to just do whatever you want. Ultimately, you have to have some sort of story to tie things together. I think there's also this idea, and I'm just going to mention this, that maybe there is a way to create ultimate freedom and yet still have a story. And Chris Crawford has got some theories about that he's trying to develop. It hasn't been done yet. No one knows how to do it. And I honestly don't think Chris Crawford's going to succeed, because I have my suspicions that it's just not possible. However, if somebody someday invents it, I'm going to eat my words and have to admit that, okay, I was wrong. There was a way to do it after all.
I also think that it's not possible, and I would be very surprised, and a lot of my perspectives about storytelling actually would have to be revised if someone were able to really do that. But I think that it isn't possible.
Well, it seems like to me that the main difference, some of the things you're talking about, is in classic storytelling mediums versus Neverwinter Nights, and to a lesser degree, other computer games, is this interaction. That's kind of what you're focusing on right now, is the player interaction. So can you guys go into some detail about maybe how this passive watcher is not, you know, this person's not a passive watcher anymore, so how do you handle those interactions in your different mediums?
In a single-player module, what you want to do is think carefully ahead of time about what kinds of interactions and what kinds of effects on the events and on the story make sense and are compelling. The one thing that you want to do is try to have the player say, when he comes up to an option, you want to have him say, this option makes sense. One of the three things you've just presented to me here, I want to do. And I don't feel like I want to do something that you haven't presented. So a lot of work and thought has to go into thinking of options that make sense and that appeal to a target audience. I think that when you're building a storytelling module or a storytelling experience, you have to start, as with any kind of fiction writing, by identifying your target audience. You're writing a mod for a certain kind of player, someone who likes, for example, to play good characters, who wants to play a heroic quest, who wants to play, there's a certain pattern that identifies a target audience. That's who you're writing for. And people who are in that target audience, if you're able to present the options that those in that target audience are going to respond to, then you've created an experience that is going to appeal strongly to that audience. So you have to put a lot of thought into projecting your target audience and deciding what options really are of interest, should be of interest to those people.
Excellent point, Tony. For DM play, I think that there's sort of two main categories, two main ways that DM play is done. And my preferred style is the tighter storyline. It's almost a merging between single-player modules and DM play. But there's another type called, where they call it a sound set, soundstage, where they'll actually have a DM who runs a campaign, and they meet once a week, and they continually keep playing. It's not scripted. There's certain rules they play by where they don't get too far away from the DM, and if he says, wait here for a second while I set something up, then, you know, they wait for that. And it's far more ad-libbed, and there's more freedom of choice on how you play your character because there really isn't as much of a predetermined plot. In fact, I've heard of groups doing this where somebody will, you know, the DM will have something happen. He doesn't really know where the story's going yet. And someone will say, oh, you know what? I think this is what's going on. And suddenly that will be what's going on. And the person doesn't realize they just helped write that part of the story. Or someone will role play a part and they'll mention their abused wife, you know, someone that is in their background. And suddenly the DM in a future session will create her and put her in the game and create a role playing opportunity out of it. In these, with the soundstage type approach, the players really do, they are partially authors of the story, whereas the approach of single player or the way I do DM play, there's a lot less freedom in adapting the story because a lot of it's prescripted. With that separation made, let me tell a story. There was a guy that was in one of my games. His name was Stalos. He was more familiar with the more freeform type of role playing. So when he came into my game, he wanted to do things that were inappropriate for the environment. He was playing a good guy, but he wanted to play a good guy that would go into this blood rage if he got too angry and he would kill everyone around him. Okay. So he told me at one point, okay, I'm in my blood rage, I'm going to kill every elf in this village. It's, you know, a good elf village. You know, there's all sorts of problems with this. I mean, like, one of the players was from that village, you know, they're supposed to be good guys. You know, it would screw up the module. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why this would never work. Mm-hmm. So I reined him in by saying, that's fine, you can do this if you want, but I absolutely guarantee you will be killed and you'll be rolling up another character. So he said, I guess I don't go into a blood rage. And later on, he was insulted by this captain of the guard, of the king's guard, so he wanted to knee the guard and run for it. Mm-hmm. And again, I said, okay, that's fine, you can do that if you want, but I guarantee they're going to catch you. You're going to be in prison for the rest of your life, and you'll be rolling up a new character. Let me know if you want to do it or not. And so, again, it was a way of kind of reining him in. I didn't tell him he couldn't do it, but he had to realize, again, going back to shared imagination, this really wasn't an appropriate action for this setting, for this story. And he wanted to have results that in real life never would have happened. You don't need the captain of the police force in the middle of the police station and then get away with it.
Absolutely right, and again, this is another example of the point I was bringing up before, the requirements of the story putting restrictions, in this case, on fairly bizarre kind of actions that the person might want to take. But if the story of your module depends on the existence of this elven village, you can't allow someone to go in and murder all of them, because otherwise the story's over.
Yeah.
Exactly, and from building a persistent world, looking at it, the soundstage analogy is actually the type of analogy that or type of direction that I was going to describe. What it starts out with when you sit down to build a persistent world as your storytelling medium is you build that soundstage. You have to sit down and effectively take your campaign. It could be Forgotten Realms. It could be your own dreamed-up campaign setting and model that. You need to model enough of it that there's some life in your world. That means creating, since it's a persistent world, and you won't have a DM on there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you will need to put in shopkeepers. You'll need to put in other non-player characters. You'll need to put in environment effects. You'll need to put in all of this periphery around this setting in order to make it rich and something that the players believe. Once that's established, what we generally pursue then is a series of reasonable quests that these NPCs would have using various new scripts and tools. We've gotten those to be semi-random to the point where they aren't always go here, do this when you start a new character. So to add a little bit of interest in there. But then it does become a DM-led event where we encourage our DMs to come up with storylines. We encourage them to work together perhaps on a plot line to move the world into the, you know, the next 2-3 years down the road. What's the kingdom going to look like? What's going to happen? And lay things out. Let the players play through those in addition to all of the surrounding setting campaigns and quests that they have and see how that world transitions. But it is very much more setting that soundstage, setting up that setting, and then putting your story in place. But you have to be willing as the author of that story to kind of go with the flow, as it were. You've put it out there for the players to be a part of this, and you have to accept that things will change and deviate perhaps from your perceived ultimate ending.
Could I ask a question on that, Kevin?
Yes.
Would it be fair to describe that basically as that what you're doing is you're setting up a loose general story arc and then a series of episodic quests so that can sort of occur within that, and then the rest of the progression of the story is a progressive evolution guided by the DMs based partly on material that the players themselves come up with?
Yeah, exactly. And depending how the players interact with the quests, succeed or fail in certain aspects, influences outcomes and, you know, how that story arc flows. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I'm just one quick thing. This is one of the distinctions between that style of play versus the single player style, where you have much more of an ability to set a very tight and highly detailed story arc, but that's limited in the sense that there are only a certain number of options that are available. It doesn't have the flexibility that you can have in the kind of structure that Kevin was describing. But it can, at the same time, can have a more detailed and a tighter development.
It generally will. It will generally be a lot tighter from all aspects. The conversations with NPCs will be much more in depth. There'll be richer backgrounds around them. You're looking at a 24/7 setting that can change here. So oftentimes the NPCs are fairly generic. You'll certainly, in certain regions, the regions where the dwarves do their trading, they'll act like dwarves and they'll do certain things, but, they'll change with the time, but they won't necessarily, always be grumpy that, the orcs are raiding, because eventually that will stop, you know, as the story arc progresses. So you have to kind of balance all of that out.
Yeah. And just jumping off on the soundstage thing, in fairness to Stalos, in another setting, in a soundstage type setting, what he wanted to do may have been completely appropriate. If that group wanted to allow him to go on a blood rage and destroy that village, and the DM has to at that point kind of abandon where he was going to go with this and start up a whole new story thread, that might be completely okay with the right group and with a soundstage type setting. It just, there's just no way you could do it with the type of module I was running.
Right, because you had a tighter story defined that required that Elven Village.
That's right.
Correct, and even in a persistent world setting, you would have to evaluate that very, very carefully, as there's going to be several plot lines or several small arcs and stories running through that. Depending upon where that is in the setting, some players may call that area home, and that's not necessarily a problem. Homes come and go within the realm as well, but it certainly still does affect it. In that extent, for instance, if it were a freeform DM campaign, yeah, you could completely go off because it's only this group of so many players. In a persistent world, you're looking to address the kind of the needs of the masses, the needs of the many over the needs of the one.
Yes.
It has to be that way. And that one can't even be the storyteller, him or herself. They have to be willing to, they've put themselves out here and their story out here for contribution, and they have to be willing to accept that.
And plus, for the masses, you have to do that over a longer period of time as well, right?
Yeah, you oftentimes you do. There are some players, of course, that won't play as often, and if a story arc runs to its completion in that time, they just come in and are kind of caught up to date as to, what has happened and, brought along, basically up to date. They'll make some RP story that they were off with a sick relative or, join in somehow, and it's back back into the mix.
Cool. This kind of goes back into the idea of a shared imagination. There's only so many people that can really share an imagination before they start eventually unable to be cohesive and hold it together. And it's fairly easy with a group in a DM play. I don't usually let the groups get above five. You can get five people being able to synchronize their imaginations pretty easily. In a persistent world setting, there's got to be a limit at some point where if you get too many people in that community, it's just no longer possible. I don't know what that is. I mean, I would guess it's like 150 or 200 or something. That's just a guess. I do think, though, that's why you will never actually see true role-playing going on in World of Warcraft. There's no way to take 2,000, 10,000 people or something and have them all role-play together. What you'll end up with instead is a bunch of little pockets where,
right,
this group of 10 people role-plays with each other and this group of 10 people role-plays with each other.
That is
so
very true also in the persistent world model. You'll find several groups that do that, and they'll cross over occasionally. But, yes, it does come to a manageable level there, and it is difficult. Some players don't accept the plot changes or they're resistant to them. Over time, they generally come around. But, you will find that where certain things are shocking to some players.
Well, I don't have much experience in role-playing yet, but from what I've seen so far, once you get up to like seven or eight players, like in a role-playing situation, it's almost a little bit too much to keep up with so far.
It is, especially, in this, and that's another aspect of, and as far as even DM-led events that we can,
yes,
I'm sure, both agree upon, there's just, because unless you use voice chat, the text windows are just flooded with information. And to do it properly, certainly the way that Kaveen did it during our session and so on, where you're asking for some dice rolls, you're doing different things along those lines that allow for some of that freeform imagination beyond what the engine is showing you your character is doing. It requires the ability to see this information flow across your screen. So it does become quite busy and quite difficult to manage as the groups get larger.
It's the same phenomenon you have in a PNP game. After you get to about six people or so, game master to keep track of everything that he has to starts becoming very difficult.
A Well, that's it for this week. If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com, or you can leave us an audio comment or question via Skype by calling NWN Podcast. That's all one word, NWN Podcast. Next show, episode 32, will bring you part two in the series of this Neverwinter Nights as a storytelling medium discussion. And I know you'll want to catch it because it just gets better and better. You also might want to check out our website where we've launched a new forums module, which is a little bit easier to use and easier to read than the previous one. Join in the discussions there. And we've got discussions already going on about the next game day for our Gallowsburg campaign, so you might check out and get caught up with all that. Until next time, this is Jay, a.k.a. Navinka Naroda, saying get in game and level up.
The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, or their partners and employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, which is solely responsible for its content.